KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. A new work by Lakota playwright Larissa Fasthorse made its debut splash in Los Angeles and is now hitting the road on the East Coast. Fake It Until You Make It is a satirical look at identity, especially some people's compulsion to claim Native heritage. We'll hear from Fasthorse this hour. We'll also get a look at a new children's show that uses puppets to tell the story of a young girl reconnecting with her Navajo homeland and culture. That's all coming up after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Next week, Wyoming lawmakers will meet at the state capitol to decide what subjects interim committees should focus on between now and next year's legislative session. Wyoming Public Radio's Chris Clements spoke with the chairman of one committee who's the only Native American legislator in the state.
The Select Committee on Tribal Relations is set to hear updates on investigations into missing and murdered Indigenous people, and it could discuss how tribal, state, and federal law enforcement manage crime on and around the Wind River Reservation. Fort Washakie Representative Ivan Posey co-chairs the committee.
The people in the federal system on the reservation really don't have that luxury of knowing who's been arrested or what they're arrested for.
That's because there's often as many as three separate jurisdictions involved in criminal cases, including the feds. Posey is a member of the Eastern Shoshone tribe and says one of his priorities for the interim is to have a committee hearing take place off the reservation so that more non-tribal members can attend too.
I think there's still a lack of understanding or a lack of knowledge on tribal issues.
That includes some of his fellow representatives, Posey says. Interim committee topics will be finalized on April 8th. For National Native News, I'm Chris Clements.
A conservative political party in Belfast has pulled the emergency brakes on new plans for Ireland's Indigenous language. As Show McPullen reports, Irish may not be arriving into the island's newest central station anytime soon.
For just a few hundred thousand quid, Ireland's newest and now biggest public transit station was to get signage in the Irish language. Even though it's twice as old as English, Irish has been suppressed for centuries, and it appears to be happening again. Members of the right-wing pro-British party, the DUP, are objecting to the new signs and got a judge to halt their installation, for now. They want a debate in their assembly, which might be required under power-sharing rules created by the Good Friday Agreement. It's the latest chapter in the long saga of a language that dates back to the Roman Empire. For National Native News, I'm Show McPullen in Ireland.
A former tribal assistant chief is sharing his native culture and food through his business. Brian Bull spoke with Jason Harris about Bow and Arrow, a food truck roaming South Carolina.
Harris and his wife, Melissa, have both worked in tribal government and still consider themselves ambassadors of a sort. Only instead of discussing policy over the table, they share Catawba history and culture over the counter.
One of the things that we have not been good at, especially as Catawbas, we don't share our culture as well as we probably should. So that's kind of given us an opportunity to answer people's questions. You know, not only the food, that's just a starting point, but we can actually get into other conversations. It helps bring our communities together even more.
Many visitors to the Bow and Arrow are non-natives, so Harris feels this is a great way to connect with others. The menu has fry bread as the basis for its entrees.
We have the bow, which is a ground beef-based Indian taco with the trimmings that go with that. And then we have the arrow, which is chicken on fry bread. Then we have a bison Indian taco. We hadn't seen a whole lot of that out there in Indian country. And then we do a strawberry dish that is my wife's grandmother's recipe, and it is just out of this world.
The Catawba are South Carolina's only federally recognized tribe, so Harris says it's great to represent his culture and share his passion for good food at the same time. The Harris's black and turquoise truck roams the areas on and near the Catawba Reservation, sharing native cuisine to powwow crowds and passersby alike. I'm Brian Bull.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for over 40 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Enbridge strives to be a good steward of the environment, a safe operator of essential energy infrastructure, and a good neighbor. More on Enbridge's Indigenous Reconciliation Action Plan at Enbridge.com. Enbridge proudly supports this program.
Support provided by First National Bank Alaska, offering a one-solution, tailored approach to meet the financial needs of Alaskans by providing banking services, loans, investments, and more to help shape a brighter tomorrow. Learn more at fnbalaska.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. Larissa Fasthorse has fun with the concept of Native identity in her new play, Fake It Until You Make It. She imagines a world in which adopting another racial identity or race shifting is just a matter of choosing the right construct. Along the way, she also puts the inner workings of nonprofits in full satirical view. The play just opened last night at the Arena Stage in Washington, D.C. Another creative talent is bringing Navajo language and culture to the small screen. Dene, musician, artist, and filmmaker Pete Sands is the writer and director behind the new children's TV puppet series, Navajo Highways. The show follows young Sadie from her urban home to the Navajo Nation, where she absorbs the culture, language, and people. It might be compared to the classic show Sesame Street, but it's filled with characters Native audiences will find familiar. It's slated for public distribution on FNX's streaming app next month. You can join today's show with comments and questions. Just call us at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Joining us now is Larissa Fasthorse. She is a Sichanju Lakota playwright, and her new play is titled Fake It Until You Make It. Larissa, hello, and welcome back to Native America Calling.
Thanks. I'm always thrilled to speak with you folks.
Joining us from Moab, Utah, is Pete Sands. He's the writer and director of Navajo Highways. He is Dene. Pete, hello, and welcome back to Native America Calling.
Yes, thank you for having me on again. Appreciate it.
And joining us from Phoenix, Arizona, we have Kimberly Key. She is a tribal early childhood specialist. She plays Miss Pete in Navajo Highways. She is also Dene. Good morning, Kimberly. It's a pleasure to have you on the show as well.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Larissa, I want to begin with you. The play, it's very, very funny. I had a chance to read it. I really enjoyed it. It's also a very strong commentary on how we define Native identity in the 21st century. Tell us more. Where did the story come from?
Yeah, you know, I think as Native people, we've certainly dealt with the concept of pretendians for a long time. And with folks, you know, being in our communities that perhaps do or don't have a right to claim those places. And so I was always like, well, how do we talk about that in a large, you know, a larger audience? You know, the world I work in, theater, is a primarily white audience, unfortunately, still. And so how do I translate that, for those concepts, for these folks? And then as I was thinking about it, I found this movement of people called race shifters that do believe that you can become any race you want just by saying so. And so I was like, ooh, those people fit perfectly into, you know, the things we're dealing with. So, and bring kind of that level of comedy and absurdity to it in many ways, even though they are real people. And so I put those things together and said, well, what's the setting for it? And I think the obvious one for me was the nonprofit world. You know, again, it's a lot about identity. You know, when nonprofits are all Native American serving, but some are run by white folks and some are run by Native folks, and the discrepancy and the kind of funding and access they're given just automatically said farce to me. But unfortunately, as we all know, it's a farce based on what really happens in our lives.
Well, you have some really interesting characters who guide this story. And one of the characters, her name is Grace, and she is
a race shifter, and she has a number of different identities, but she makes some really interesting kind of bold claims, and these are issues that you kind of hear rumblings about here and there, but mm-hmm. she really puts it, I mean, at one point she basically challenges people to accept, you know, this whole idea, people accept changing the physical gender you were born as, and it's a smaller step to embrace race shifting. And that's something a lot of people are kind of scared to talk about. It's a very touchy topic, but you go all in on this, Larissa. You really do. It's really bold.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I mean, it's a little scary too. I mean, admittedly, but you know, part of my job as a writer is to understand the point of view of all of my characters, right? So I have to get into each of their minds and say, well, this is what they believe is true, and this is why they believe this way. Because you know, if I can't believe in my character, then it's just wasting people's time to watch it, right? You know, because they're not going to be a true human fighting for something. And so I really had to get, you know, into these people. I got into chat rooms and things and chatted with some of these folks to find out, like, well, why do they believe this? And how do they make that logic work? I mean, ultimately, you know, I hope people who keep listening and hear that, you know, we unravel a lot of her logic and the way that she's looking at things, but they are complicated issues and there aren't easy answers. And there are things that we're still figuring out, you know, as the science is not catching up entirely, because a lot of the science that we use for genetics and for our genome is actually based on white supremacy assumptions. So the way that, like, when you do those DNA tests, which I have not done, but when you do them, according to a lot of geneticists of color working today, they're saying, oh, you know what, they made this assumption of what this means in your genome based on something like, oh, well, those people, you know, couldn't possibly cross an ocean. How could they do that? They weren't sophisticated enough. And it's like, well, no, what if we say they could cross an ocean? Well, then that changes everything in the interpretation. So the science is not caught up with us. And that's really important for us to all understand that we're making assumptions about these very complicated things using a science that is very flawed.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us how the premiere at the Arena Stage in Washington, D.C. went last night. How did people react? How was the audience? Were they engaged? Did they enjoy it?
Yeah, they had a lot of fun. It was, it's pretty crazy. I mean, as you know, it gets pretty wild. It's a farce. So there's lots of door slamming and crazy action. And, you know, in the tradition of French farce, there's a lot of sexual innuendo and things that are ridiculous and people's mistaken identities. And then, of course, as you said, you know, people, you know, pretending to be other identities. So it gets even more complicated. So the audience had a great time. They had a lot of fun. We're still actually working here for another week. So we are still making changes. We made a lot of changes after LA, and now we're continuing to make changes because that's the fun of live theater, is it gets to keep growing and changing with the audience input.
Well, tell us about the cast. You have some talented actors working with you.
Yeah. We're really fortunate. There's four Native American actors in the cast, and then two white actors. Our main, you know, the headliner is Amy Brenneman, which I think a lot of people would know from, you know, she's been in a million TV shows. Judging Amy, of course, is a very famous one that was based on her mother's career as a court judge. Noah Bean, who's been on a lot of different things. In our Indigenous cast, we have Shyla Leffner, who was just recently on Broadway. And so she was able to join us here in D.C. We have Brandon Delsed, who was in the J-Lo movie last year. We have Eric Stanton Betts, who is a fantastic actor and model, who's been in all kinds of things. And then we have Burgundy Trejo Phoenix, who a lot of you folks will probably know from Spirit Rangers. She's a voice actress as well as a live actress, and she's done a lot of things there.
The setting is also really innovative. You have kind of like a modern day co-working space, but it's a bunch of different Native organizations, and they kind of collaborate with each other a little bit. They chat. And tell us more about why you chose that specific type of setting for the whole play.
Yeah, I mean, it's a combination of things. You know, when I decided to write a farce, my director, Michael John Garces, would really push me into writing a farce, because I've been doing a lot of comedy, but he's like, I think your work is just like one step away from farce, so why don't you just push it a little farther? And one of the traits of farce on stage is a lot of slamming doors and mistaken identities and going in and out of spaces and just missing someone. There's a lot of that physical humor, which is a lot of fun. And so you need to have a lot of doors. And when I was thinking about Native American serving nonprofits and, you know, that are owned, you know, run by different types of folks, I was like, well, let's take one of these like repurposed buildings where we stick everybody together in one space and then, you know, assume just because we're all Native people and we all serve Native people, it's going to go great, you know, when, you know, in reality, there's going to be some conflict and there's going to be some tricky things going on. And then additionally to that, you know, you can't see the set on radio, but it's incredible. It's the walls are these massive murals by Marlena Miles in the Twin Cities and River Garza from Southern California. They're incredible. So, I mean, as soon as you walk into the theater, you're just struck with these huge two-story murals of Indigenous art that are the backdrop of the whole piece.
And one of the lead characters, Winona, she's involved with restoring Native plants. And that's a whole nother storyline. And that plays out in the farce as well. But tell us more about her character and that whole relationship with the plants.
Yeah, Winona is, she's our main Native character. She and River, who the one that Amy Brenneman plays, are the two main characters, the two women, and they're kind of coming to head. So, you know, Winona has suffered a lot of the issues that many Native orgs have, where, you know, she's got something legitimate to do and say, but she just can't get anybody to trust her with the kind of money that she, you know, needs to do her work. So she's chosen then because of that. And I think this is, you know, an important thing, right? Sometimes activists can be seen as really intense or really specialized. And it's like, well, the world has pushed Winona into that space. You know, she can't get funding. She can't get the respect of other, of like white run, one, sorry, I can't say that, white run organizations. So she's gotten very frustrated. And, you know, she sees these other people getting money and getting support and getting, you know, all that acclaim that she really feels like she deserves for the work she's doing. But the work she's doing has become especially niche. It's she's fixated on Buddleia, which is the name of butterfly bush, which a lot of people have. But she's, you know, as, in some of my research, I found out that it's actually not good for butterflies. It's too sweet and it causes problems with them. And so she has decided with her limited resources, she's just going to fixate on that one bush, Buddleia, and she's going to get rid of it and replace it with better plants for the butterflies. But you know, others from the outside think, you know, it seems a ridiculously narrow thing to just point at one bush over and over again and work on that for an entire organization. But she knows that she's really trying to save the world.
Larissa Fasthorse kicking off our conversation today on Native America Calling. Her new play, it is titled Fake It Until You Make It. And if you'd like to join the conversation, if you'd like to talk with Larissa, ask her a question, or just comment on what your thoughts are with regard to Native plays and Native entertainment, you can do so by calling us at 1-800-99-NATIVE. We've got the phone lines. They are open. Our producers are waiting for your call. 1-800-99-NATIVE. The ability for tribes to guide their own destinies has always been the driving force behind the push for sovereignty and self-determination. As tribal leaders and others gather for the annual Tribal Self-Governance Conference, we'll hear about economic development, healthcare, and relationships with other governments, all on the next Native America Calling.
Challenges to societal harmony abound. Trauma, depression, addiction. In Native communities, these challenges affect nearly everyone. The Native American Social Work Studies Institute educates social workers for careers to address the needs of Native communities. You can be part of the solution as a peer support worker, community health worker, or a counselor with culturally relevant training from the Native American Social Work Studies Institute. Info at online.nmhu.edu. New Mexico Highlands University supports this show.
Quince little girls from all around. There were downtown dancing on street corners. There were uptown swaying with that sound. My thing sure seems different.
You're listening to Native America Calling. We are talking with Lakota playwright Larissa Fasthorse about her new play, Fake It Until You Make It. What other work of Larissa's are you a fan of? Let us know. You can call us at 1-800-996-2848. Share your comments on the air. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And Larissa, before break, you were talking about the farcical nature of the play and the slamming doors, and just there's also a lot of very inside Native jokes for, you know, Native folks who really understand nonprofit world and how we relate to our identity. But what about the audiences? Because you mentioned there's a lot of non-Native folks in the audience. Do they get those inside Native jokes?
Yeah, you know, there's a mix for sure. I mean, some of the things, frankly, the white audiences don't necessarily get. And that's okay, though. That's a big part of my work is that, yes, I'm working in these white spaces, but I try to bring Indigenous culture and Native culture into these places in a way that is authentic and true as much as I can, without doing too much translation. I think it's okay for white, I always tell people here that come to my place, it's okay to not understand everything. And it's okay to have to maybe do a little work afterwards to understand what I was talking about or what some of these jokes were. I always joke that it's, within the first 5 minutes, I know exactly where all the Native people are sitting because they'll start laughing at something that like nobody else is. I was like, oh, there's my people and I can go find them later. So it's always fun. And I think that's all right. You know, white folks are used to having everything and understanding everything and everything being written with them as the center point. And I think it's okay for them to not get all the things and have some of the things be just for us.
Now, would you ever consider writing something for TV? Because when you talk about farce mm-hmm. and the slamming doors, I can't help but think of that old show back in the day, Three's Company, because it kind of reminds me of the same kind of, you know, people like, oh, I thought I heard something, but I didn't hear it correctly. And it's like all these misunderstandings and things like that. So because it does kind of have a sitcom feel to it. Have you thought about maybe doing that?
Not with this play yet, but I do. I've written a lot of TV and movies, actually. So I've done five in the past several years that unfortunately didn't make it to the screen. I've created two more that I just sold to the networks. So hopefully one of them makes it to the screen soon. I've been doing a lot of film and TV work for a while now.
In these plays, how long does it take from the time you write the initial play to getting a cast together and producing and just getting it ready to actually have the performances? What all goes into that?
Yeah, you know, this one was really, really fast, and it took 3 years. And that was crazy fast in my world. Usually it's 5 to 6 years is a normal time frame to get what it's called a commission, where the theaters hire me to write a play for them. So I was commissioned to write this play. And then, you know, between writing it, and then we do lots of workshops with lots of different actors coming in and reading it and spending, you know, we pay people to come for a week and work on it with us. My director, Michael John Garces, was with me from the beginning. So he and I have been working together for 13 years on a lot of different shows. And so we all kind of developed that. And then, you know, to get it finally produced, like I said, this one happened in 3 years, and that's considered really, really fast in my world.
What else are you working on?
Oh my goodness. as soon as we're done here, Michael and I are going to New York City to work on our adaptation of Orinoco, that novel by Afra Bren, and we're doing that at the Public Theater in New York. I also have my second Broadway play that I'm going to be developing is at Second Stage, where I did the Thanksgiving play on Broadway, and I'm just starting that commission. My Peter Pan is still flying around the nation. It's going through until this summer, and then the North American tour will be stopped for a little while. While we're in talks to try to move it to Broadway, which is pretty exciting. And then I've got these two TV shows I just sold. So I'm going to be getting to work on those as well.
What can you tell us about the TV shows?
Oh, and then I forgot. I'm performing in Seattle this fall too. Oh, I totally forgot about that. And I'm going to be performing one of my shows in Seattle this fall.
All right. And the TV shows, can you tell us anything about them?
I'm not allowed yet. They're so secretive about those things. So no, unfortunately not.
No worries. Well, for listeners who want to check out Fake It Until You Make It, what can you tell us? Where can they go? Will it tour more throughout the country?
Yeah, right now it's going to be at Arena Stage through May 4th, which is in Washington, D.C. We do not yet have plans to take it elsewhere, but we do have a lot of theaters, other theaters and New York folks coming down to look at it to see if hopefully we can keep doing it more and doing it in more places. That's, you know, always the dream and the goal. This is our second theater and we hope to do more, but we've, you know, really taken this time to just develop it and get it ready. I haven't been sending it out to people. My agent's been keeping it really close because we wanted to have the audiences. You know, that's the key with comedy and farce, is like you have to have an audience or it just doesn't make sense, you know? So we're every night rewriting things and reworking because we're learning from the audience. And that's why theater is such a fun medium, because it doesn't work until the audience is there. And then we say, oh, okay, this is where they're laughing. This is where they're not quite getting it. This is where they're really pushing forward. And it's so cool to have that finally and get to rewrite, rework it, and make it ready. So hopefully when we're not there and it goes to other theaters, every audience will have the same fun that these guys are having.
So it sounds like the actors, they need to be prepared from night to night. The script could change.
It's, yeah, it changes every day.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. It's a tough job. New plays are not for everybody. You know, it's actually a very specific skill to be a new play actor, because the writing is changing, the direction is changing, the fights are changing, the choreography is changing. Everything's changing every day until, you know, we all finally leave and they get to just do their thing. But it's a very specific skill that not all actors have. Their actors are fantastic actors, but are not new play actors, because they don't have that capacity to just change all the lines in a moment and say something different. And that's a very special skill that, you know, fortunately all of these actors have.
Mm-hmm. Well, Larissa, congratulations. Really happy for you. And please give our best to all the cast and everybody else who's involved with the production.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate speaking with you folks.
You bet. Absolutely. Give us a call. 1-800-99-NATIVE. Phone lines are open. We are talking about Native entertainment today. Plays, television shows, puppetry next here. And we have Pete Sands and Kimberly Key also on the line. They are involved with the production Navajo Highways. It is puppetry on the small screen. And let's start with Pete Sands. He's the writer and director of Navajo Highways. And Pete, again, thank you so much for joining us today. And you've been on our show before, and you've talked about your music and some of your other creative projects. How did you get to this point where you're doing puppetry and you're writing a children's television show?
Yes, it started back in 2019. I was invited out to New York Fashion Week at the time, and I was working on a small TV show called Yellowstone. But so I was working, and when one of the Sesame Street employees reached out to Yellowstone, they had considered introducing some indigenous puppets. So they reached out to one of the producers, and the producer was like, hey, I have a friend of mine who's Dene, he's Navajo, he works with us, and he might be more helpful than me. So they connected me with them, and I told him I was going out to New York for Fashion Week, and we made plans for me to stop by and just kind of talk with them. So I was scheduled to be there for like 5 or 6 days. I was hired to be at Fashion Week, but I spent like 3 hours at Fashion Week and spent the next 5 days at Sesame Street. And I was fascinated because I grew up watching it, you know. I grew up watching Sesame Street. I was so intrigued by it. And I just took that, gave them my perspectives on what they could do with the puppets, and they never introduced the puppets. But during COVID in 2020, I was running the Utah Navajo COVID relief program in Utah on the Navajo reservation, and I would go to these homes that were very rural, and these little kids would come up to me and ask me if I spoke Navajo, and I'd be like, yeah. I said, well, we can't speak to our grandpa because he only speaks Navajo, and we can't speak it. Can you tell him we can use his truck to go to town? And I ran into a lot of situations like that, where there's this generational gap and just communication barriers. And so I visited a friend of mine who's a teacher, and she was trying to tell her kids, who's the first graders, to pick up toys. And they weren't listening to her, but she went inside her desk, she took out a puppet, and she started talking to the kids with the puppet, and the kids listened. And a little light went off in my head, and I'm like, hey, maybe I can do this with language. So that's how it came to be.
Oh, yeah. I just love that approach. I'm a parent, and I can speak from experience. Like, sometimes you can talk to your child, and then you'll take a little stuffed animal and you'll kind of pretend the stuffed animal is talking, and they do pay more attention. So that's just so fascinating. Now, Pete, what all goes into just creating the puppets and, you know, voicing them? And I mean, there's just so much going on. It seems like in many ways it might be harder than being an actor to be a puppeteer.
It is quite challenging. When I first got into it, when I first had the idea of it and I got the first puppets, I met a puppet maker at the premiere of the first season of Yellowstone out in LA. And, you know, this is in 2017. So I was like, oh yeah, great to meet you. I don't know if I'll ever need a puppet in my life, you know? So fast forward a couple years later, I'm like, hey, do you remember meeting me? I was like, I need some puppets made. And so I reached out to her and she said, just sketch me some ideas of what you want the puppets to look like. And I sketched Sadie and Ash first. No, Sadie and Uncle Al first. And she sent in to me pictures of it. And I was like, oh man, this is great. Then I got the puppet and I'm like, I was working. I'm like, I really don't know what I'm doing, you know? And so I reached out to some friends I made on Sesame Street. They're the puppeteers and they kind of helped me, gave me some online class course lessons. And just from there, it's good if you're basically bringing an inanimate object to life. You got to make them seem real, even little nuances, little head nods, you know, like little, just little movement, make him a complete character, make him a person. So that part was difficult because, you know, you actually bring out a part of you. This is what I found therapeutic when I was working with kids at elementary schools. They can say things through the puppet that they can't say themselves. Mm-hmm. So that's where I think the healing and the trauma aspect of it came through when I started working with kids at elementary schools. I'm like, okay, some of you kids are telling me things that are pretty deep. And this is, you know, this is a lot more in depth than I thought it would be. You know, it's more, it's like a mask for them to wear, but, you know, they can speak it through something else, a vessel, as you would say. So that, all of that kind of just went to, all right, I'm going to work this puppet now. So, yeah, there's a lot of challenges, but it's very rewarding to see the kids, like 300 kids scream at the top of their lungs, just happy to see it. That's crazy.
Well, let's give our listeners a sample of Navajo Highways. Here's an audio clip from one of the episodes. We hear from Sadie when she and her Uncle Al meet her favorite musician, Pete, backstage.
Oh, no. Are you okay, Mr. Sands?
My throat feels funky. Kind of itchy.
Oh, are you about to go on stage, too?
Yeah.
Oh, I have a solution. I'll be right back. Here you go, Mr. Sands.
What is that?
It's chicle or Navajo tea. It'll help your throat.
It's my favorite. Thank you. Or I should say, yeah. Oh, yeah, Kiss, for taking the time to chat with us and to help me with my niece here.
Anytime, old friend.
Now I gotta go. Sadie, I'm gonna sing your heart out and have fun. I'm going in.
I'm going in, Mr. Sands.
Just call me Pete.
Okay, Pete. And up next is Sadie.
Can hold us back. There are so many great things we are good at. Hidden talents just waiting to be discovered. I learned that all we need to do to find our talent is to try and take that risk. How would you know if you can fly if you never use your wings? It will be hard, but I've also learned that if you have a strong support system and encouragement, anything is possible.
My son says she loves me. He has a warm girl.
That was a clip from Navajo Highways featuring Pete Sands, who is the show's writer and director. Pete, loved it. Tell us more about that song. Who wrote it?
I wrote that song.
All right.
I wrote that song when I was working on the script because I put insert song, and they're like, what song is going to be? And it's a song I sing to my daughter. And it just turned into, I was preparing for this role of being a guest musician. But yeah, I wrote the song and recorded it in my little home studio with Tyra, who's a voice for Sadie. I actually voice three of the puppets on Navajo Highways. I voice Uncle Al, I voice the DJ Joe Denny, and I voice Old Storm, the Trinity Post owner. So three different puppets, and, you know, it's just great. People's reaction to it, to screen and then you did. It's just so emotional, and more emotional than I was prepared for it to be. And it moved me in, just the kind words people have had to say about it so far.
Well, it really has that feel of the Navajo Nation. Because there are some scenes that are actually, you know, showing the landscape and showing trucks and things like that. So it definitely totally has that vibe. And you mentioned you also voiced DJ Jenny because you added local radio station KMRU. So it's got that feel as well. And tell us a little bit more about that radio element and why you chose that station and of course, the character DJ Denny.
The reason why I was a huge fan of the TV show Frasier, I don't know if you remember Frasier.
I do, yeah.
Yeah, and I just love how people call into him and just talk with him and banter with him. And also, Joe Denny is kind of like the coyote. He's the storyteller, he's a trickster, he's kind of, if you notice, he comes in when the kids ask a question, he'll have an answer on the radio. So he's kind of that spiritual element, kind of like the element that's kind of like the spirit that's always around. You don't know he is, but he is, and he knows. He's very mythical. And I just figured it'd be great to have someone kind of be that comedic relief and also be really relatable. And he's very charming and charismatic. And from all the screenings we've done so far, he's the crowd favorite.
We're going to take another short break, but we're going to come back. We'll continue our conversation with Pete Sands, and we will also talk with Kimberly Key, who plays Miss Pete in Navajo Highway. So definitely, listeners, stay with us. And if you'd like to give us a call, if you'd like to ask Pete or Kimberly a question about what it's like working with puppets or what it's like putting together a television show like this with puppets and, again, teaching Navajo language, teaching culture, teaching tradition all through this medium of puppetry and television. You can do that by calling 1-800-99-NATIVE. 1-800-99-NATIVE. We've got the phone lines open and we're waiting for your call. So let's get some listeners on the line here with comments and questions or any thoughts with regard to the show that we're talking about today, Navajo Highways. Give us a call, 1-800-99-NATIVE.
Trickster Cultural Center hosts the 11th Annual National Gathering of American Indian Veterans to honor veterans and military personnel of all cultures, eras, and branches in a Native way. Trickster Cultural Center's National Gathering of American Indian Veterans is open to the public at no charge Friday, July 18th and Saturday, July 19th in Schaumburg, Illinois. More at TricksterCulturalCenter.org/national-gathering-2025. Trickster Cultural Center supports this show.
There are more than 120 Alaskans awaiting a life-saving organ transplant. You can save up to 8 lives and make a difference in your community as an organ donor. It's important to get informed, register, and let your loved ones know your decision. Learn more from Life Center Northwest, the organ procurement organization that stewards the gift of life for all of Alaska, at lcnw.org. That's lcnw.org. Program support by AmeriCorps Vista, where you can kickstart your career and help others in your community. With AmeriCorps Vista, you can serve in an office setting and address issues of poverty while gaining career experience and building your leadership skills. Learn more by visiting AmeriCorps.gov/Vista today. That's AmeriCorps.gov
alyuta.org/VISTA. Support provided by Alaska Growth Capital. The Aleut Marketplace is now open. Aleut Corporation shareholders and registered descendants are eligible. Applications are available at alaskagrowth.com under Marketplace.
Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for over 40 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
This is Native America Calling. We're talking with Pete Sands about his children's puppet TV show, Navajo Highways. The first six episodes are screening at selected Native communities right now. If you've had the chance to see Navajo Highways, tell us what you thought about it. We're at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. We've got a caller on the line. This is Chanupa, listening in Pine Ridge, South Dakota on Keeley Radio. Hello, big brother. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you for having me, and thank you, Sean, and everybody. You know, I heard this guy talking about these puppets, okay? These puppets did something in our language, okay, long time ago. And my grandma Cecilia used to do this, Cecilia Martin, and even Cora Hildebrand, and, you know, my little sisters, you know, Sonia Little Hawk, and my other one, okay? So this is what they always used to do. They say, and you're going to say it, Sean, you're going to say it. They say, So if somebody's going that way, he goes like, I can't really say with that, but I think he's talking about this bird and all this. No, he wasn't telling you. He was telling you the story. The story was about how they did this long time ago. So this is what our people done this long time ago, okay? Now, our elders do this, okay? They say, Taku trok salena ampetu wanji ukte, naha, isha, Taku hena eye cracking, tahena wanka. So then now the other one will turn around, ha, no, shi, tomuku, ye, lena no loose, piki, and a yogi, the joiner, isha, what's on it. So it was a beautiful thing, man, Sean. That one. So I want to say all of them that put into that understanding, and thank the guy with his puppets. These are all their children, way. And so I want to thank all of you, and you too, Sean. When you come out here to South Dakota, I'll take care of you, brother. And thank you everybody.
All right, brother. I can't wait. I can't wait. I'm coming. I want to hang out for sure with you in Pine Ridge. And Pete, Chanupa's a regular caller to the show, and you know he mentions elders telling stories and different voices and things like that. And it really makes me think about that because I remember that as a kid as well. And so there really is, maybe we weren't using puppets years ago, but we definitely like acting out stories and using different voices and bringing characters to life. That really does speak to our tradition, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. I mean, my mother, she was telling me, she says, I knew you were destined for something because when you're a child, you always used to mimic the voices you would hear on TV or on the radio. You would like even accents or even characters, you would mimic them and it would be so scary because you'd be like in another room and you'd be talking a different accent, and I think there's somebody else in the house with me. but I feel like, storytelling is it's a very, very, very great indigenous trait, and we're very animated people. If you ever listen to an old person or an elder talk, they always use their hands, right? They use a lot of hand movements, and they do a lot of grand gestures. So I think puppetry is just an offshoot of that, and it's a great way to tell a story. It paints a picture. A lot of indigenous languages are descriptive languages. Navajo itself is a descriptive language. So everything, even when you say a word, you can kind of smell it. Like it takes you back to saying, oh, that word is a smell or a taste. It's not. It's very, very, primitive, I guess. I don't know if that's the right word, but the word can trigger a memory of like stew cooking. And it's very, that's why I think when people speak, if they try to curse or speak in a foul way in our native language, it's uglier, I guess, because of that.
Huh. And, wow. More organic, maybe, the way you're describing it. Like,
yeah.
More organic. Yeah. Wow. That is so cool, Pete. Let's talk to Kimberly now. She plays Miss Pete in Navajo Highways. She's in Phoenix, Arizona, and she's actually a tribal early childhood specialist, but now she's also doing acting as well. And Kimberly, thank you again for joining the show. Hello again. And how did you get involved with this production as an actor?
Thank you for having me. I got involved by connecting with Pete actually through my work. We host a Dener Early Childhood Summit every year, and we invited Pete to be one of our guest speakers, our keynote speakers. And then we got to talking afterwards. He talked about Navajo Highways and his work with Navajo Highways. That was in the beginning stages. And then we invited him on our little podcast that we just started through work again. And shortly after, I would say like a few months after, he reached out to me, asked if I was interested. And yeah, the rest is history.
So they say. Now, your character speaks Navajo. Tell us what that was like, speaking Navajo through a puppet.
I'm actually a human character. So working with the puppets, it was definitely an adjustment. Pete talked to me before during the scenes and letting me know, you know, talk to them, you know, as people, because this will be portrayed, you know, to children, and you want to make it seem real for the kids viewing the show. And so that part, I don't think it was super difficult for me, interacting with the puppets. Sadie and Ash's character, who plays Sadie and Ash, Tyron, Drew, and also Grandma Sally, played by Katrina, they were all very supportive, directing me, helping me. They've done this for quite a while too. And so it just felt like a very comforting environment. And yeah, everyone was willing to give me a helping hand because this was like my first time doing anything like this. So it was very, very nerve-wracking in the beginning, but towards the end, I felt very appreciative for the opportunity.
Now, of course, a big part of this show is it teaches young people how to speak Navajo. And are you getting any feedback from Navajo language teachers, maybe using the show in classes or thinking of it as a tool to really foster more young people speaking the language?
Yes, I feel like this is definitely something very needed now that, you know, there's a lot of increase in Indigenous representation in media, and this show being specific to Diné, there's a lot of teachers that work in the early Head Start, our Head Start, the daycares, home visitors, early intervention specialists. So all across early childhood, majority of them have to create their own materials in the Diné language, the ABCs, flashcards, you name it. And so this show will be another teaching tool for them that can be accessed through media that they can show in the classrooms. And then also maybe kids can create their own puppets. So I can see a lot of ideas in the classroom stemming from this. And actually, Pete was at a conference in Phoenix, I believe last year. It's called the Arizona Home Strong Families Home Visiting Conference. So home visitors are specialists who provide in-home support and services to families and young children. And they have tribal home visitors too as well. And Pete was a guest speaker there. And the conference gave everyone in the audience puppets for being a part of the conference. And then we hearing Pete talk about Navajo Highways. And then afterwards, like the day after, a lot of people were talking about how they use the puppets with their kids. I gave my puppets to my nieces and nephews, and it became a routine for their school drop-offs. They would have the puppets and, you know, talk to each other in different voices, reenact their things that they see in their everyday life, whether that's like reenacting eating at a restaurant or even just how their parents talk to them too. So it was really neat to see like how they already picked up, like wanting to play with the puppets, learning from the puppets. And I can definitely see this as a big teaching tool in the classrooms.
Now, Kimberly, these puppets that were given away, were these actually the characters from the show, or were these different kinds of puppets?
I wish they were characters from the show. That would have been awesome. They were just regular puppets. I think they were diversity puppets, so they had puppets in from representing different ethnicities.
Okay, yeah, because that would be really cool to have. Maybe Pete, that's something you're thinking about? Maybe a line of puppets of the actual characters from the show? Is that something that might happen in the future?
Yeah, this is something I've thought about. And, a lot of people ask me when we do shows if I have shirts or sweaters or stickers, dolls. So those are definitely on the way. And, the conference she was talking about, it was tremendous, because the feedback we got from it was, you know, this is something that a lot of people have done before, but something about the way we did it is very unique. And I'm just very open to collaboration. A lot of different tribes have reached out to me so far saying, hey, how can you come to our reservation and help ingrain or start this type of program here with us? So I was thinking about that. I know season two, we're going to start shooting in a couple of months. Is maybe, you know, Uncle Al and Sadie will visit puppets from another tribe and just keep it growing like that. Because, you know, we're indigenous languages, all of them are dying or disappearing or on their way down. And it's important we keep our language. And I'm just happy we can do our small part in trying to keep it alive and keep it fun. So not everything is just so depressing, you know. Navajo Highways is a children's show. It's about happiness and laughter, right? And that laughter's healing.
For sure, right. Kimberly, there are different locations where the show is filmed on the Navajo Nation, and there's also interior trading post and different places. Can you tell us about some of those locations?
One of the locations was at a trading post, like you mentioned, and then one being Pete's homestead too as well, which was really neat to... my character has a herbal shop, a medicinal herbal shop. And so seeing the setup and what goes into the setup was amazing. Being around all the herbs, the smell, I think that kept me at ease too, like just smelling all of the cedar, the Navajo tea. And just being around the community, I think just being in the community too felt comforting. The scenery was just amazing. I went out to Moab, and I've only been to Moab for maybe like once or twice. So to spend some time up there was really nice, and to spend some time with all of the cast and get to know the cast, because this was also my first time meeting them too as well. It was such a positive environment. Everyone was very supportive. And it made me feel at ease. And that's like as far as the locations that I was able to visit.
Well, speaking of the cast, we have to talk about Tyra Wilson, who is the lead actor and voice of Sadie. What was it like working with her?
Oh my gosh, Tyra is so sweet. It was amazing to see them at work. It felt like second nature to them. So for Tyra, Drew, and they were on hours, you know, they're kneeling on the ground, or most of the time sitting on the ground, and their arms are up the majority of the time to keep the puppets in frame. And so at the end of the day, their arms were like sore, or they had breaks and stuff too. I'm like, oh my gosh, I wouldn't want to arm wrestle Tyra or Drew. they did awesome. And they were also encouraging me too. They're like, you're doing good, you're doing great. They were really, really nice to work with.
Well, Pete, tell us where you found Tyra Wilson and the other actors.
Drew was a child, she was very well known around the our part of the reservation for being kind of like a model, the child model. And she did a lot of pictures, and I just reached out to them and said, hey, can I take some photos of you for this healthcare center I used to work for called UNHS for the mask. We're wearing face masks, and I guess that's how I got to meet them. And I reached out to them, and they just talked about wanting to do more things together, and Tyra wanted to get into filmmaking, and I was like, you know what, I'm doing this puppet thing. Maybe you'll want to try it out. So they just took to it, and they stuck to it, and then they kept doing it. And they've been working with me for about 2 years now, and it's just great. You know, I don't know how long they're going to stick with me, but they've been with me so far, and they've been tremendous, and they far exceeded my puppetry skills. So that's just how it met them, and now they're family.
I want to talk about one more element of the show before we have to wrap up. A lot of country music, and you've got a lot of references to legendary country music performers, Waylon Jennings, Charlie Daniels, George Strait, and that's a part of Navajo life and culture as well. And tell us how you went about incorporating those elements into the production as well.
Well, you know, as a child, I grew up listening to country music, a lot of Waylon, a lot of Johnny, a lot of Willie, you know, Chris Christopherson, Loretta Lynn, and I just felt like, If I play anything else on the show, it won't feel authentic. And you're generally writing from your perspective, right? The creator, I'm writing my perspective of what my experience was on the reservation. And country music, especially Rez Country. We have a Rez Country band that plays on there, and I got some country music. It just feels like the old Navajo, the reservation way I grew up back in the early 90s and late 80s. It has that feel to it. I didn't want as much technology. I didn't want technology to be prevalent in the show because I think we're too far into cell phone usage and stuff like that. But it's just a nice throwback, and just gives people a feel of like what a lot of is on what they hear a lot of on the reservation is country music.
All right. Well, Pete and Kimberly, congratulations, continued success, and we're going to be excited for people to watch this first series, and also super excited for the second season as well. So, unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap up the show, but it's been a wonderful conversation today, and our guests were Larissa Fasthorse, Pete Sands, and Kimberly Key. Thank you all so much, and please join us next week. We'll be broadcasting live from the Tribal Self-Governance Conference in Chandler, Arizona. Want to give a shout out to our hardworking crew in Albuquerque, New Mexico, as well as the hardworking folks in Anchorage, Alaska, our parent company, Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Hope you all have a safe weekend. I'm Sean Spruce.
Are you or someone you care about looking to take their education to the next level? Native Forward Scholars Fund is here to help. With awards up to $30,000, Native Forward Scholars Fund is dedicated to supporting Native students as they pursue higher education. With Native Forward Scholarships, you can overcome financial barriers and open doors to a world of opportunities. Native Forward Scholars Fund, working to build a brighter future and empower Native students one scholarship at a time. Info and applications at nativeforward.org who support this show.
Support by AARP. Despite their service to our country, U.S. military vets, active duty service members, and their families are targeted by con artists significantly more than civilians, and are 40% more likely to lose money than civilians. Vigilance is our number one weapon against fraud. You have the power to protect yourself. If an offer sounds too good to be true, it probably is. More at aarp.org/vetsfraudnetwork.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
We're in the money. We're in the money. We've got a lot of what it takes to get along. We're in the money, and the skies are sunny. Oh, man.